Welcome to Started From the Bottom, how to beat the odds and become a successful entrepreneur. And I'm your host, Trudy. I'm a certified personal trainer, an online fitness coach, and an entrepreneur, and the founder of Body Envy. I remember when I started my company, Body Envy, I was lost, I was confused, I made so many errors. A lot of them were expensive ones. And this podcast will share some of those mistakes, things I wish I knew, in hopes that it will help you become successful faster, help you to avoid some of the mistakes that I made. I'll also be interviewing amazing entrepreneurs who've built successful business. They'll also be sharing their stories and, you know, offering you tips and advices of things that you can do to become a successful entrepreneur. So grab your pen and paper and take notes and let's do this. Hey, 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 it's Trudy here, guys. And we're slowly coming out of quarantine, and you may have gained that quarantine 15 or 20. Don't worry, no one's judging, but hey, I got you. I created my 30-day at-home shred with Trudy, where you work out with me. Everything is pre-recorded, no gym, no equipment. You work out from the comfort of your home. Full meal plans, which include recipes and grocery lists, are included. To learn more about it, just go to my website, bodyenvy.ca, and click on 30-day at-home shred, right? So that's bodyenvy.ca. Hey guys, Trudy here, and today's guest is Alexis Dean, and she's the founder of Dovetail, which is a global community on a mission to advance female entrepreneurship through generosity, collaboration, education, and unforgettable shared experiences, including Camp Dovetail, Dovetail Summit, and the year-round Dovetail membership. Prior to launching Dovetail, Alexis lived and worked in 10 countries in 10 years, wow, supporting Fortune 100 companies and schools as a professional facilitator, educator, and corporate trainer specializing in company culture and community building. Let's definitely get into this interview. Today, I have with us Alexis Dean, who is the founder of the Dovetail Community Women Entrepreneurs. Hey, Alexis, how are you? Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, Trudy, thanks so much for having me.
Yay! All right, so exactly what is the Dovetail Community of Entrepreneur Women? What are you guys about? What do you do?
So we're, as it's called, a community of women entrepreneurs, on the rise. So those that have businesses and are growing and scaling them and looking for the support to do that. So we bring together women for in-person and online connection and community and learning together. We started with an event that we call our summit, and that has grown into another event, which is our summer camp. And now our main event every year is the summer camp. We bring together about 200 women from across North America at Camp Tamaqua, and we gather them for hands-on workshops that they choose from, all the camp activities, incredible meals, nights by the fire, and that's how we've started to build the community so far.
So it sounds like it's a camp for women who are entrepreneurs.
Exactly. Yes. For those that identify as women, we always include a couple of men as well. But I actually started this because it was what I was looking for. I'd gone to a lot of other entrepreneurial events. I own another business. And so as I was growing that business, I was looking for connections and community. And, you know, I'd heard that quote before, the quote that says, you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. Mm-hmm. And I looked around and I had great friends and wonderful family, but I wasn't spending time with a lot of entrepreneurs, and especially women who were doing what I wanted to do. And I wanted to know women that had families and women that had lives outside their business, but also were growing bigger businesses. And so I started as a one weekend thing, and then it grew into now that we have camp and a full year round community online, and we do pop-up events and dinners, and we just had a ski day 2 weeks ago, and all sorts of incredible things happening among our community members.
Beautiful, beautiful. I find that most entrepreneurs, we usually start business based on, we notice there's a lack or a need of something. For example, myself, when I started my my personal training company in Toronto, going to clients, I was working at a gym and I noticed that women did not like coming to the gym. They felt intimidated. They found reasons. So that's how I started mine. So similarly, you wanted a support, you wanted something, and you noticed it wasn't around, so you started your own, which is great. You said that you guys offer support. What kind of support? What are some of the examples of support that you offer? Because I find support has such a broad meaning, right?
Yeah, totally. Well, I am not a business coach, and we are not a business coaching community. But what I found that I really got the most from was going to events, not like typical conferences or networking events where you sit in a chair and you listen to someone speak from a stage and maybe they show you their PowerPoint and you take like a million notes, but you never actually implement it in your business. So when we get together, we actually run workshops where people are able to take the material from an expert in a certain area, whether it's negotiations or hiring staff or leading your team or operations and systems and that sort of thing, business, or whether it's parenting or, you know, relationship stuff, whatever it is, all of our workshops in person and online are really designed to provide people with the support they need to actually implement those skills and those things in their businesses. So whether it's a workshop or just by having the community, by building real connections with other women in business at camp or online in our groups, people are offered the support of a peer network. And these are not, you know, it's not anyone who can really be part of it. We do curate and we're an invitational community. So we want to make sure that the women who are part of it actually have businesses and have grown a business to the point where they're actually generating revenue. And they have the ability to share from the experience that they already have. So I have a great friend who runs an organization for women who are just starting their business. And so we always refer to her and to her community if you're just at the starting stage. But we really do bring together women who are capable of supporting one another through our peer groups, through our events, through our workshops, to be able to actually, you know, help each other build and grow.
Okay, good, good. All right, I'm glad that you clarified that. You know, you're not a, your community is not about a business coach or a life coach. It's offering the support. Now, you started Dovetail because, as you said, you wanted that support. You wanted to be around women entrepreneurs, humans who identify themselves as humans, as women. When did you decide, okay, I'm going to do this? Instead of thinking, okay, I want this, and continuing to look for it, you decided, all right, I want it, I'm looking for it, I can't find it, so I'm going to actually create it myself. When was that moment?
I think this is a huge thing for a lot of the entrepreneurs that I know. You know, you might start by looking to see whether a service or a program or an offering exists. And so I was growing my other business, which is a corporate team building and training company. And I knew that I needed to be surrounded by other people that I could learn from and that, you know, I wanted to go to events where I was actually learning from people and not just listening to people talk at me from a stage. And so I started going to other events and, you know, I love guys and I grew up as an athlete and, you know, I have a brother and always was hanging with the guys as well as my old girlfriends. But I found a lot of these entrepreneur events were just mostly men and they maybe weren't having the same conversation and experiencing some of the same things as the women entrepreneurs were. And so, yeah, to kind of get back to why I started it, it was just that I looked and looked and looked and could not find something. And initially I just thought, okay, well, I can't find like a real, an event that exists that's going to meet my needs, but maybe I can do it on a smaller scale. So I started just with one weekend, and even just in creating that one weekend, there was so much demand for it that we actually doubled the size of it before we even ran it. So we went from 25 women to 50 women in like 48 hours. And wow. I think there was, you know, by the end of that, they were asking, like, what are we doing the next thing? Like, what are we doing next? So it was real proof of demand. There was proof that we needed this and that it was a feasible thing to continue to run.
Okay, now you said that you just decided you were going to do it on a smaller scale. you got 25 women. How were you able to get those 25 women? Because a lot of people don't realize when you start a business, you may have this idea, but it doesn't necessarily mean that once you build it, they're going to come, right? You build it, they can or cannot come. So you built it clearly and they came. How did they find you? Did you run like Facebook ads? How did those women find your event to attend?
Yeah, this is huge. I mean, it was a big thing in my other business as well. I am not an expert marketer, but I do build relationships with people. And so I built both these businesses just through building connections with people. I don't even like the word networking. I don't use it. I don't have business cards. But what I did was I reached out and I went to events and I created friendships with people and I shared with them in both businesses. This worked, but I shared with them what I was working on. I asked them what they were working on. I looked for where they were having challenges or struggles, and I searched to find ways to meet those needs. And then when I had them, because I had made those connections with people, I was able to reach back out and say, hey, I'm actually doing this thing that I think might be for you, because I knew what their challenges were, because I had talked to them about some of the things that, you know, were keeping them up at night or that they were working through with their business or their team or their partner or whatever it was. So the actual way that I started, bringing women into the DevTech community was for the first event, I kind of looked for five pillar women. I was like, I want like five women who are, I call them like pillars, but they're, you know, really solid women in the entrepreneurial community that probably have a network of their own or people of their own in their world that they are already friends with entrepreneurs or people know about them. And so I knew if I could get those five involved, if I could get them interested in the event and get them attending, that they would probably share it with their people. And that I would then be able to say, oh, so-and-so is coming. Would you be interested? Because, you know, this is the kind of woman we're bringing together, and I think you'd be a great fit. And that helped build trust, because then people knew that we had those others involved. And so when I reached out to those first five women or so, it was kind of scary, because it was, I did do a little cold outreach. I also stalked them online.
We all done it.
Found out, you know, event they were going to or where they were maybe speaking, and I just put myself in the way of their greatness. And so I found a way to either get them in person, or, you know, there were a couple that I did just do the online sucking thing where I like DM them and said, hey, like, this is what I'm working on. I'd love to know if you've ever been part of something like this. Like, not right away trying to sell them on it, but like, is this something you've heard of or something you've ever done? Or I would find another way to connect with them. And then once I had them on the phone and I shared, you know, what we're doing and asked about what they were building in their business, it was easier to get them involved. And then once I had them, I said, you know, who else, you know, that might be interested in this? And they all had other people. And so then they would put me in touch with them. I always ask for direct referrals. And they put me in touch with those people. And again, like, I didn't just look for like any entrepreneurs. I always talked to people and said, you know, what are you working on? And what are some of the challenges you're having? And if I knew that what we were building or what I was building with my one other friend at the time, before I had a team, if I knew that we could solve their problem through our event, then I knew they'd probably be a good fit. And then there was an invitation extended. So that was kind of a tactical strategy. And the same thing with the other business. It was just, you know, going to events, going to conferences, going to trade shows and meeting people who worked in the industry and looking for kind of side avenues to get in. So my other business, I went and met people that work at venues where our clients were hosting their events, and made friends with them. And so then when potential clients came to them and said, hey, we're looking to do like a team building event, we're just looking for the venue right now, they would say, oh, do you actually have somebody, a facilitator, to run that event? Because we have a great, connection here who would probably be good for that. And so they would then refer us. So it's all through relationship building.
Relationships. So you made it a point to build relationships and then offer service. It wasn't, oh, hi, this is what I do, come on in type of thing.
Yeah, no, it's by caring about what people needed and what they were doing. So in the team building business, this is for anybody that maybe is working in more of a corporate environment or, you know, B2B, business to business. I went and I found these oftentimes women who were event coordinators and sales for some of the venues that we used for hotels, for ballrooms, for conference centers. I connected with them at their events, like trade shows and conferences. And I said, you know, what's the biggest challenge in getting some of these corporations to book your venue? Or what are the quiet times in your venue when you're really looking to bring more people in? Or what's your favorite kind of event to host there? What are your clients looking for? Like, how can we help them and how can we work together to help them? And also, you know, maybe sell some more for you or maybe fill your venue more often. And then once I had that, then I could say, you know, we have some great programs that might be a good fit for that. And I'm happy to refer my clients to your venue if you think it's a good fit and it works for them. And I would love it if you would tell your clients about me and our team if they're looking for something. So it was always just about like finding, you know, what's keeping them up at night, what are their challenges, and how can we help them? Because that's probably how they're going to help us too.
Exactly. You found out what their needs were, made it about them. Because at the end of the day, people don't care what you know until they know how much you care, right? So you made sure you led with that. What are you struggling with? What's keeping you up at night? And then you offered how, you know, you're able to help them. Good. I wanted to ask you about Dovetail. Okay, so when you decided, okay, I'm going to host this event, where did you get the funds? How did you obtain the funds to secure the venue? How did you determine, okay, how much do I want to make from it? How did the financial aspects go? Because I find when it comes to business, a lot of us, and I was like this before, didn't like talking about money, but hold on, you're running a business. Mm-hmm. You have to have that money conversation. If you're running mm-hmm. with a partner, you have to have that conversation with yourself, with the partner. If you're running it by yourself, you have to run your numbers. I remember I used to be afraid of money. Now I'm not afraid of it because I'm running a business. I need to know how much is coming in, how much is going out. Where did you get the funds from to start this when you decided mm-hmm. I'm going to host an event?
Yeah, I think we just need to remove this taboo around talking about money. I know, like, historically people have been like, oh, it's tacky to talk about money. But I think especially among entrepreneurs, and this is part of, you know, at Dovetail, when you're in a community surrounded by other women entrepreneurs, we have this conversation and we talk about how, like, people are uncomfortable talking about it and maybe it's been seen as sort of tacky to talk about it. But among entrepreneurs and among your peers, you need to be able to put it out there and to have those financial goals and to also just have those really tricky financial conversations to say, like, I don't have the money to invest in this. I need to talk to investors and, like, how do I get an investor? Because in order to even have that conversation, you kind of have to humble yourself to say, like, well, I don't all of a sudden just have this money to do this. So I need some help in figuring out how I'm going to get it because it is out there. And I think that really holds people back in a lot of ways too, because they think, well, I didn't come from money. I don't have a trust fund, or I don't have, you know, a rich husband or whatever, so that's not possible for me. But there are so many other ways to do it, and it doesn't always require, you know, just having some private stash of money in your bank account. So I built this community on the back, basically, of my other business. And my other business had very little overhead. So I was able to essentially raise the funds to be able to pay for a venue deposit. And the first venue wasn't super fancy, so the deposit wasn't really, really high.
I had to start somewhere.
Start small. Because I think if I'd started, like, with some of the venues we use now, like, for our more senior women's event, it's called Dovetail Summit, and I rent a private island for that. And if I tried to start with that, well, yeah, no, that just wouldn't happen.
Did you just say you rent a private island?
Yeah, we hooked up to that. But that's like, so we also host once a year, we host an event for really high-performing women entrepreneurs who are at the top of their industries, who are looking for that, like, close connection to other women that are in their space, that are, you know, can relate to some of the challenges. Because I think at every level of experience, we face different challenges. So, you know, it might sound incredible to have a business that's generating 8+ figures a year, but you have challenges there too. And it's so good to be able to relate to peers in that environment. So we do something for them. But anyways, back to camp and the community. Really, I just started small and I was able to use the money for my first business. And my first business, I was selling to corporations and I was going in and running training and team building programs. So we could charge a really good rate for that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the margins are really high in that business. And so I was able to save money working in that business. And, you know, Trudy, yesterday you and I talked about this, and I don't know if you were already going to get to this, but we talked a little bit about privilege yesterday offline before the podcast. And I think it's just so important to say, like, the reason that I was able to start the other business is because I didn't have, you know, huge debt from my schooling, and I don't have kids yet. And, you know, there are so many factors. And I think sometimes people see, like, this really glossy image of entrepreneurship, but they're not seeing the behind the scenes, and not everybody is starting, you know, from the same starting lane. So I was very, very fortunate, and I can never say that I built this all on my own, because I always had the emotional support, and, you know, my parents helped me with school. So I was starting from not quite the bottom because, you know, I'd been working and I didn't have a huge amount of debt.
I'm happy you brought that up. So let's touch on your other business, the business that you had before Dovetail, that you kind of used the funds. What? Mm-hmm. So you did mention that that business is about training and team building, right? Mm-hmm. When did you start that business? Because that's the business that financed the one you have now.
Exactly. And that's probably like a common story for anyone who's listening. You know, that they might have started something, but maybe they started a side hustle and then that helped them get into the business they're in today. Or maybe that's kind of their approach. They want to grow something bigger, but they know they need to have a little side hustle money to get there. So the other business I started 6.5 years ago now, and actually almost 7. And I started that. I'd lived all over the world and worked all over the world. I was a school teacher, and then I worked my way back into a training position. So then I was working as a facilitator, tutor, and trainer for teachers in different school groups. And I did a postgrad in adult training and development, and then went back out into the world and did more professional facilitation and corporate training in different parts of the world. And eventually I was working on these contracts all over the place. And to be honest, I was pretty exhausted, and traveling looks really glam all the time, but it is actually really exhausting to be on the plane all the time and sort of isolating too. I was based in Thailand at the time and I was kind of lonely. And so I moved back to Canada, and I actually moved in with my mom, and I was able to save money by moving in with my mom, and I was able to start a business because I didn't have to worry too much about really high rent or anything like that.
That business. And you also didn't have any debt. So you were already starting at a pretty good place, right? So exactly. You didn't have any debts. You had income from already working, and you didn't have rent. So right there, you were able to just go right in. And a lot of people don't realize, you know, I'm glad you brought that up and talk about privilege, because a lot of people don't realize that everyone's story is different. And even though you may see someone and it seems as if they got there faster than you, you don't know the backstory, because someone like you, who came from a place where you had that financial freedom, where you had that emotional support, not everyone has it. For example, when I started my business, I had a ton of debt, right? So right there, that definitely made a difference. And right now, with more women of color are starting businesses. However, most of us who are starting businesses, we still don't have that financial backing. We're running ourselves into debt. We're using the credit cards, the line of credits to finance it. So that right there makes a huge difference. And I'm glad you brought that up and acknowledge that.
Yeah, I mean, it is not a fair playing field. And that is something that, you know, we are working to work with Dovetail as well, and ensuring that we have, you know, equal representation on any of our stages and in our community and, you know, within the groups, and also providing opportunities for women to attend camp who come from underserved neighborhoods and, you know, those that don't have the same access. And, you know, it's not, like I said, it's not a fair playing field, and I would love to see that change. I also recognize that, you know, as a white woman, going into corporations and pitching programming and training opportunities, I'm seen differently. And, you know, that's also part of an injustice that I see in the world and something that I think needs to change. So yeah, there were a lot of things there that I was very fortunate for, and that are not, you know, equal in the world, but they enabled me to get to a place where I could save the money to then start Dovetail. And part of, you know, what we do at Dovetail is that we use some of our funding to support local communities wherever we are. So with our summit, yes, we rented this private island, but we're also supporting local woman entrepreneurs down in the Bahamas to help them recover from the hurricane damage. You know, and when we're up in Canada, we're looking for partners who, in different, wherever we are in Canada, whether we're in Algonquin or out on the island, we're looking for partners with charities and nonprofits that support women in different communities. So always looking to support, usually trying to hopefully supporting women entrepreneurs, but in any case, looking to support our local communities and to give back through what we're doing. In addition to our scholarship program for camp. So lots of good things to be done with the access that I have, but I also just want to see some of these things change. So.
See, I appreciate and I'm happy that you mentioned that you being a white woman is viewed differently when you go into corporations as opposed to a woman of color, because whenever women of color say these things, we're looked upon as if, no, that's not, it doesn't go like that. You know, we kind of get that look like, no, we don't. Like, yeah, we do. You do treat us differently. Like, so let's not do that. Now, you said that you are helping to bring more women of color into the community and at the table. What are some of the steps that you've taken or you're taking to help with that?
So again, you know, going back to like our representation as far as women running workshops, like we don't really have stage at camp or stages so much, but when we do workshops, they're usually in a round, but we do look for equal representations. We want just as many women of color on our stages and represented as our experts and ours. You know, we did an interview series back in the fall, and I think it was, you know, 60% women of color. And again, just looking for ways to highlight those women that are doing big things, because when you don't see yourself represented in a community, you don't feel like that's the place for you, and you don't think that's a possibility for your life. And, you know, I've had enough friends tell me that, and I know that that's a reality. And, you know, I think it isn't fair. And so as much as we can, you know, working to change that, you know, the reality of it is also that there just are not as many women of color with businesses generating over seven figures annually. So those $1 million businesses, like, it is a lot harder to get to $1 million in annual revenue when you are not starting from a fair playing field. So I think everything that we can do to provide more education, more opportunity, more connections, more funding for women of color, I think the world would be a better place. So.
Yeah, it would be. All right. So in terms of your first business, do you want us to talk about it a bit? Because since it kind of helped you to build this amazing Dovetail community where you're helping women entrepreneurs, you know, your support, giving them the support they need. Let's touch a bit on your first company. So when you moved back, from Taiwan to Ontario and you decided to start this company, how were you able to obtain your first client? Was it people that you already knew before you left? How did that part happen? The reason I like asking these specific questions is, as someone in business, someone who's had business, I remember when I just started my business and I had no idea how to obtain my first client. I didn't have a marketing background. I knew absolutely nothing about business. I just always thought, okay, I have nice arms. I'll be walking down the street and women will see that. And it sounds so naive.
Yeah.
Years later thinking about it. Or another thing that I also did, I would attend networking events, but I always felt so intimidating because most of the women at these events that I was attending, they didn't look like me. They weren't women of color, so I felt that they didn't want to work with me because of that, or because I was still new and inexperienced and so naive in business, my own insecurities played such a huge role in it. So, you know, for people listening who wanted to start a business and they're like, I don't have any money for Facebook ads, I don't have any money to pay for SEO, but I need the client, like, this is why I'm asking, to offer them some sort of resource as to, hey, this is how I got mine. This is something you can do to obtain your first client also.
Yeah, I mean, I tried all manner of things because I hadn't lived here in a long time. And I knew, like, in my other business, I was looking for corporations. I was looking for big companies that I knew they had a budget. And they did corporate training and they did team building events. So I was looking for, like, well, who do I know that might know somebody that works for one of these companies? And then can I get that person to introduce me, you know, to somebody in their HR department? So I guess the first thing is to really figure out, I had to figure out, well, who's responsible for hiring these team building and training companies? Who's the person I really need to get to? Because you don't want to talk to, you know, somebody in the accounting department, if they're not having anything to do with this, if it's the person in HR you need to get through to. And I think that applies to any business. So for me, I was like, all right, I need to be talking to someone fairly senior in the HR department because they're responsible in many cases for helping find these organizations like mine and for the hiring decisions for hiring on, you know, training companies, that kind of thing. So I literally went to all like friends, family, every time I went to a networking event, even if I was talking to somebody that I was like, well, they're clearly not my ideal client, but you know what? I bet you they know somebody. And maybe they know somebody that works for a bank or a major corporation. And if they know somebody that works for one of those corporations, that person probably knows who I should be talking to in the HR department. And if I'm really lucky, if I build a relationship with that person who knows somebody in the HR department, maybe they'll even send me a personal introduction email so that it's coming from somebody on the inside. So I literally, like, I would be at my bank and I would say, oh yeah, you know, we opened up a new business. I've got my new business bank account here. And have you guys? Yeah, I mean, literally talking to a teller about my business.
Every chance you get, you were advertising. Every chance you get, you were bringing up your business.
Not advertising even. This wasn't even advertising. It was saying, you know, here's what I'm doing. I'm actually looking to connect with somebody in HR at the bank. Do you know anybody that's in any level of HR at Scotiabank? And they would look at me kind of crazy, and like sometimes people would be like, I don't really know. And be like, well, who do you think? Do you think there's somebody here at the bank that might know somebody in HR at, you know, at Scotia? And then they would eventually, like, I got through to people that way. Or like just crazy. I mean, maybe I sounded like a lunatic, but it worked. Because eventually what you want is that direct introduction to someone. Because if you can get an intro to somebody who maybe you're not going to have direct access to because maybe they're not the type of person to go to events or whatever, if you can get that intro from somebody else, it is so much easier to get that person on the phone. And once you can get them on the phone, you build a relationship with them and you grow from there. You figure out what they need. You figure out what they're doing right now. You know, for me, it was always like, you know, what are you all doing for team building events? You do an annual event. Oh, great. Who have you been working with? Amazing. You know, what was some of the challenges you had with that thing that you did last year? Trying to run it in-house. Oh my gosh. I mean, I can imagine, you know, it probably takes a whole lot to try to DIY it, right? So you get them talking about some of their problems and then you come in as a solution. Anyways, long story short, I really just like hustled and made relationships with everybody I could.
So yeah, you were asking questions. You were like, okay, how can I help you? This is, you were asking them what they needed help with. Same thing, similar thing you did with Dovetail and how you can provide it. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, every business goes through slow periods, no matter what business you're in. There's a certain time of the year where it's slow. Enough revenue isn't coming in. What are some of the things that you do during your slow periods in your business? One, to either ensure you're still generating revenue, or is it more of, okay, you use that slow time to kind of reflect on the busier periods that have passed and to plan for the next one? What do you normally do in those slow periods?
I mean, we're lucky, like now we've kind of grown to a place where I don't have slow periods so much anymore. Our, you know, events are happening pretty regularly throughout the year. You know, we're doing well, and especially since we're launching online, so adding even more continuity to the community and to the revenue. When you talk about the other business and when I started, definitely in those first couple of years, I had some really slow patches. Like I'd be so excited because, you know, the spring and the early fall were amazing for big team building events. So we would get like a couple hundred person events. We'd be running like a few of those every month. They had a great little team that I was growing. Money was flowing in. It was awesome. And then you'd hit like the pre-Christmas season. And for the team building and training world, like companies don't run training during November, December, really, like mid-November on, you're pretty much just flatlining. And I was not in a position where I could afford to not be making money. So I was very lucky. I had some friends that bartended for a couple different companies, catering companies or whatever, and a friend who worked for an organic beer company. And I went and bartended, and it was tough because like I had a couple situations where I was bartending or catering, like working catering staff. And, you know, during the day that day, I might have been like talking to somebody fairly high up in a corporation, or maybe I, you know, run a team building event or a training program. And then like that night, people from that event are seeing me with my white shirt and black pants serving beer or serving drinks. And I have really had to humble myself and say, like, well, you know, that doesn't really matter. And if it's the kind of person that's going to judge you for hustling on the side to make sure that your business stays alive, then they're not the kind of person you need to care about anyways, because that's not, you know, the kind of person I want to be around. So I definitely did my fair share of hustling. And I had friends who were like, I thought you had like 2 degrees. Like, what are you doing? Why are you serving drinks? Like, and it was like, whatever you need to do to make it work. Like, I was not going to give up. And I was going to, just do what I had to do. So
I served drinks. That.
I did one beer serving thing. It was this like winter beer fest thing, and it was like minus 30 outside. I've never been so cold in my life. The beer things were all freezing, the taps, and it was like just a catastrophe. And then of course, who shows up? Like 2 of my corporate clients. Oh my gosh. And beer, like the beer thing was frozen, and I was like whacking it, the beer was like coming out on me, and it was just anyway.
See, I'm laughing because I
absolutely embarrassed. Yeah.
See, I love that story because I remember there was a point where I had to do Uber, and I remember when I had to do it, I said to my friend, I'm like, what if any of my clients see me? And she's like, who cares? You have bills to pay. Like, if your clients are going to judge you for doing Uber when business is slow to pay your bills, then probably they shouldn't be your clients, right? Because people want to know that you're industrious and you're doing stuff. She's like, if they want to stop working with you because of that, let that be. And it was like, oh, okay. But I think that's also that internal, the ego. It's the ego. Mm-hmm. But then it's like, the ego don't pay the bills. Like, this is what's going to pay the bills, because you and I know whether funds are coming in from clients or not, the bills are due. They're due. They're due. So you got to do what you got to do. If it's go do Uber, if it's put on that white shirt and go stand out there and serve some beer in the cold, that's what you got to do.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, and that's, I feel like for me and for a lot of the people I know and the women dev tech community, like those first couple of years, like, I think people think they're going to snap their fingers, they're going to build it, and all of a sudden the clients and the customers are going to come. But there is definitely, there are sacrifices, and there's a certain amount of like losing the ego and humbling yourself and and just being okay with it. And I think like the thing that one of the biggest lessons that I've learned that I still have to work on every single day is just surrender, is that, you know, it might not be exactly what you pictured it to be. But if you're still loving it, then you gotta surrender to how it is right now and move forward the best you can.
But here's the thing. If it did really work out the way we had pictured it, would we have learned so many valuable lessons? That's so something true. I've learned. It's like, if it worked the way we wanted it to work, we would have missed so many lessons in the process. And I think being an entrepreneur these days, it's, you know, probably we expect the glory, we expect the end result faster, partly in part because of social media. You know, we see everyone, most people on Instagram, I like to call it living their best curated life, seeing as if they start a business last night, and by the end of the week, they're making 6-7 figures, and they're only working 5 hours a week, and it's like, that's not reality. Like, if that happened, even if they're working only 20 hours a week, how many hours did they put in behind the scenes that you didn't see? So these are the conversations I want to have, where it's like, you can achieve those things, but it takes work. It takes sacrifices, right? It's not like, oh, I'm always on vacation and getting paid like that. At some point, you have to actually put in the work for it to happen and drop your ego. That was something I definitely had to do. It's like, bills are due. No clients came in because it's July. July is slow. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Uber to pay these bills. And you go do it. Right.
So I think like the whole, you know, oh, I work 4 hours a week. Yeah. Amazing if you can get there, but you do, like those people, you know, Tim Ferriss, he wrote the 4-hour work week. Well, when he started his business, he didn't start by working 4 hours. He started his first business by like grinding, and he got himself to a place where he could do that 4-hour work week. But I don't know anybody that really started with that sort of lifestyle or started with that sort of work week, unless they were funded by a trust fund or a very wealthy partner, that kind of thing.
But he himself admits that he works more than 4 hours a week, right? So that's another thing. That's another myth that's being sold. Maybe when he wrote that, he was doing it, or that was the plan, but that's not something he does now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, you have two businesses. Have you ever had days when you wonder, WTF? We know what the WTF is. I curse a lot, but I'm trying to keep this PG-13. So have you ever had days where you wonder, what the beep beep am I doing? I don't want to do this. Oh, I love this. Oh, I don't want to do this. Oh, I want to go back to teaching. Oh, I don't want to do this. Mm-hmm. When have those, what do you do? How do you handle them?
I mean, I don't know any entrepreneurs, especially like the women in our community and the women at Dovetail, whether they're, you know, our private island ladies or whether they're ladies in the community at large. I think everybody goes through that. I think it's totally normal to have those moments when you're like, you look at your friends that work a 9-to-5 job and you see them on the weekends just taking all their time and they, you know, they're calling you up at like 5:05. Oh, wait, you want to come to happy hour? Like, what, are you all crazy? No. But I think, it's normal. And I do, I have those days and have those moments. And that's when it's been really important for me to recognize, like, when am I feeling like this? And to actually track that. So I know that there are certain times of the month as a woman that I'm like, I've got to be careful because I might let myself get down on myself. I might start to have doubts about my business. And this is totally just my hormones talking. Or when I'm really tired and, you know, you compound stress and exhaustion and maybe not eating all the proper foods, like those things all get you down too. And I have friends who are like in a hole in their business. And I'm like, well, what are the things that you're doing to really take care of yourself? And it's not always like going to a spa, but it's like, how much sleep are you getting every night? And what are you eating for dinner? And, you know, are you getting any exercise? Are you getting some fresh air? Are you getting outside? So I think really checking myself on all of those things has helped a lot to not have as many times when I'm feeling down or feeling like, WTF am I doing? But it still happens. It just doesn't last as long anymore.
Yeah, it's kind of like you get into it and then you just kind of snap out of it. All right, enough of this now. I got things to do. Mm-hmm. All right,
because I've already shown myself that I know that's not the truth. I think sometimes it just takes a little while to trust yourself that you know you can do this thing. So it's easier to snap out of it.
Exactly. So you did mention that you have the online community coming up, the online portions. Give us some more details about that and where we can find it. Exactly what is it about?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, we have, you know, our Camp Dovetail. And for them, we've had a year-round Facebook group. And then we've done these pop-up events and, you know, dinners and ski trip and, you know, all these little things that where we try to bring the community together. But we really wanted something more structured than sort of like pop-ups and dinners occasionally. And, you know, the Facebook group, which is lovely and great. And the ladies like get a lot from each other in the private group, but doesn't have as much structure. So the idea for the online community was for that and as well to include women who might not be ready to come to camp, or maybe camp is not their thing, or they live far away, or they're in a remote community. So with the online community, what we're planning for so far is A, to have access to a full directory of all the other community members. So if you are looking for somebody in a certain industry, you need an introduction to someone, or, you know, you're looking for somebody that might have a business similar to yours and you just want to get to know her because maybe you can partner on something or collaborate, or you can learn from each other. Mm-hmm. You can access them in that database, in that directory. We'll still have our private group, so you can jump in there. And what we have for now, our private Facebook group has three things. We do ask, we do give, and we do share. We try not to share. We don't do promotions for each other ourselves because this is not a pitching group. But people often work with each other. But sharing is more like, hey, I'm going to this conference. Somebody gave me an extra ticket. Would anybody like it? Or an ask would be, oh, my goodness, we're looking at maybe acquiring another business, or I'm looking to hire somebody and I'm needing some tips on the best interview questions you've ever had. So people jump in and do that kind of thing. So we're just formalizing that a little bit more. The couple other things that we're doing are monthly workshops. So you can join live online, or you can watch the replays. And then the other exciting thing that we're kind of building, I'm not going to mention it yet, but, okay. But I think like a lot of us, you know, as we're growing our businesses, it'd be so nice sometimes to be like, oh my gosh, you know, for me at least, I had a lot of situations where I was like, oh my gosh, I wish I had like a lawyer in my family. Or, you know, some people are super lucky and maybe their parents have a great lawyer and they can just call that person up and ask them like, hey, is this like the correct process for this? Or is this contract legal? Or, you know, that kind of thing. So we want to give people access to people that they might not have access to otherwise. And again, for me, this is about evening the playing field, because I think a lot of people from certain communities, maybe they come from a really wealthy background, they might have access to these people because of their family relationship.
It's a privilege, right?
privilege, exactly. And not everybody has access to experts and their parents, accountants and investors and lawyers and that kind of thing. And I think it's something that all of us entrepreneurs need, and it's not something we can all afford. I don't know about you, but I certainly, my first couple years of business was not about to be hiring an HR consultant to tell me what legally I needed to do if I was trying to hire an assistant. So I think everybody's kind of winging it and praying, like, oh gosh, I hope I'm not doing this wrong. I don't wanna...
Because if anything goes wrong, there's no money to pay.
Yeah. So we're putting something together to help out with that and to make the membership really valuable. And, you know, just again, like asking our ladies, like, what do you need? And knowing for myself and my peers, like what we need, you know, needed and need as we're growing our businesses and looking for ways to support that. So that's coming up. If people want to follow along, they can go on Instagram. It's at Dovetail Community. All one word. Dovetail is like the tail of a dove. So Dovetail. It's actually a symbol of interconnection. If you look at the corner of a log cabin, that where the logs all fit together, that's actually called the dovetail joint. So that represents to us all these incredible women from different industries and different backgrounds coming together to support one another. So Dovetail Community on Instagram or www.dovetail.community. So,
okay.
Okay.
All right, we are about to wrap it up. Thank you so much, Alexis, for telling us about yourself, how you got started, and all of that. We really do appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
And that's a wrap for today's episode. Oh, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoy the show, please be sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts.
And hey, if we're not already connected on Instagram, you can definitely connect with me. It's Trudy German, pretty easy. TRUDIEGERMAN.